Hey, y'all, Scott here. First of all, thanks to the show's sponsors and donors who make it possible for me to do this. Secondly, I need more sponsors and more donors if the show is to continue. ScottHorton.org/donate has all the links to use PayPal, Give.org, Google Wallet, WePay.com, and even Bitcoins to make a donation in any amount. You can also sign up for monthly donations of small and medium-sized amounts through PayPal and Give.org. Again, that's ScottHorton.org/donate for all the links. To advertise on the site or the show, email me, scott@scotthorton.org. And thanks.
All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is the Scott Horton Show. ScottHorton.org is my website. Keep all my interview archives there. More than 2,800 of them now, going back to 2003. And you can also follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at /ScottHortonShow. And lucky us, last minute here, got a hold of Jonathan Landay, the great reporter from McClatchy Newspapers. If only you all had listened to him and read his reporting in 2002, there never would have been an Iraq war. Welcome back to the show, Jonathan. How are you doing?
I'm well. Thank you very much, Scott.
Very happy to have you on the show today, and I really appreciate you doing it on short notice here. Obama's crackdown views leaks as aiding enemies of U.S. Well, that's a pretty broad way to state it in your headline here at McClatchy, D.C. Please elaborate.
This is a story that I worked on with my colleague Marissa Taylor that we published the end of last week on what the Obama administration calls the Insider Threat Program. And this is a program they launched after the arrest of Private Manning in the WikiLeaks case. And it's intended to crack down on leaks of classified information by government agencies, but under the sort of very broad guidelines that were issued by the White House, some agencies have gone beyond that and extended it to unclassified information. And it's reliant to some extent on federal workers keeping tabs on their coworkers to watch their coworkers' behaviors in case it indicates some kind of risky security risk, and also urges managers to punish people who fail to report their suspicions about their coworkers.
Mm-hmm. Well, and now listen, I know you've worked on the intelligence beat and who knows what before that, but I know you've done the intelligence beat, very serious, very high level type people you've talked with and reported on for years and years and years now. And so I know that you've got, you know, the background to answer this question, I think, is don't they already have a very careful and delicate balance worked out about just this sort of question? How do you keep enough tabs on people that hopefully you can make sure that they're not doing wrong, but then again, you don't want them to hate their bosses so much that they refuse to work, or that everybody just starts pointing fingers at each other and turning each other in over, you know, not real infractions, but just vendettas and whatever. I mean, we've had a government for 240 years, the same one this whole time. It seems like they already know just how far you can crack down before you blow it. And when I'm reading this thing, this is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, this sounds to me like they're just going to grind themselves to a screeching halt.
Well, the thing is, that individual agencies within the intelligence community, for the most part, and the Defense Department had their own individual programs. What this is, for the first time, is the President of the United States setting standards for the government writ large. And this program extends beyond the Pentagon and the intelligence community to federal departments and agencies such as the Peace Corps, the Social Security Administration, the Education Department, the Agriculture Department. Any federal agency that has access to classified materials. But as I said, because of these very broad definitions of what an insider threat is, agencies have enormous latitude to determine their own policies, and including what kind of unauthorized disclosures they are going to crack down on. And those, in some cases, we have found include unclassified information. Now, you're right in terms of sort of this idea that coworkers need to look at, you know, have to watch sort of what they call these behavioral indicators in terms of trying to suss out security risk. But for the most part, that really existed only within the intelligence world and the Defense Department, not in these other agencies.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I mean, in talking to your sources, in reporting this, I mean, did they all seem pretty incredulous about this? Like, kind of, geez, Jonathan, you wouldn't believe what's been going on here sort of thing. That's the way it reads.
Well, the amazing thing is about this, that we did a lot of this reporting based on documents that we were able to get a hold of, both online and some that were given to us, and none of which are classified. The fact is that the president issued his executive order on this to put this program in the works back in October of 2011. So this is something that has been well underway for almost 3 years now, and 2 years now, and we'll just have to wait to see where this goes. But you know, yes, we've talked. I mean, the fact is that even now, when you try to talk to people who you've talked to within the government for a very long time, people who trust you because you maintain their confidences and they respect your ability to handle this information that they give you in a responsible and objective way, some of them are unwilling to talk now because of the atmosphere that now exists within across the government. Because of this fear that they will suffer retaliation if they do talk to a journalist without permission. And the thing is, though, as part of this program, the president issued new and stricter guidelines on protection of so-called whistleblowers, you know, people who blow the whistle on government waste, fraud, and abuse. The problem is that that the government only considers whistleblowers, true whistleblowers, those who use the internal mechanisms for reporting these the waste, fraud, and abuse. And the problem with that is that there have been numerous cases that we know of where people have used those internal reporting mechanisms to try and alert both their superiors and Congress to serious problems within their agencies, and those people, instead of having their cases investigated fairly and dealt with fairly, suffer job retaliation from their bosses. So there's a problem here with the way that this program has been structured in terms of giving weight. The weight of this program is put on sort of the idea that you have these people inside who can't be trusted, rather than looking at how you achieve the balance that you were talking about. And the way I think that you achieve that better balance is, look, there are almost 5 million people with clearances in this country now. A lot of them are contractors. The government overclassifies things, has been doing that for a very long time. So I guess one of the best ways of dealing with this problem would be to reduce the number of people who have access to secrets, and reduce the number of secrets that the government keeps to only those things that truly need to be kept secret.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, they put themselves in an impossible position here when they classify so much. And then, you know, it's always worked. I think, you know, my kind of politics 101 at junior college textbook sort of frames it where leaks to the media and investigative reporting, that's all part of the political game. That's all part of the system in America, is people got to be able to talk from time to time, even off the record, to tell journalists what's going on. And that's why it's the fourth branch, the fourth estate, and this and that and whatever. That's how it's supposed to be. Now they want to keep everything secret, but they don't want the people or the media to know anything that they don't hear from a government press conference. Well, and that's asking the absolute impossible.
And the other thing, though, that this system doesn't accommodate, from what we can tell, are leaks like the Pentagon Papers, for instance, which were highly classified documents that showing the true history of U.S. involvement in Vietnam and the Indochina conflict, that once exposed by Daniel Ellsberg to the New York Times and the Washington Post, showed how the successive American governments had misled and lied to the American people about the conduct of that war. war. Now, though, that kind of leak under this system would be heavily, heavily penalized, and the, you know, the whoever leaked it would obviously would almost certainly be facing charges similar to those of that are against Snowden, the Edward Snowden, the former National Security Agency contractor who's now on the run. Mm-hmm. And those would be espionage charges, because that's the other part of this program. The part of this program emphasizes, at least the way it's being implemented in the agencies that we looked at, and that includes the Peace Corps, emphasizes leaks as being the equivalent of espionage. In other words, if you leak information, and the emphasis again is on classified information, that's tantamount to helping the enemies of the United States. Only that doesn't accommodate a leak like the Pentagon Papers.
Right. Well, and look, I mean, you're Jonathan Landay. Everybody, look, in the summer and the fall, well, look, the whole time, but especially, let's say, like right when Congress was going to vote on the authorization, Landay and Strobel are publishing in Knight Ridder, mid-level CIA guys saying, nuh-uh, man, this isn't true, and Doug Feith is running an ad hoc thing where they're digging through our trash and making up nonsense over there in Rumsfeld's office, and the people need to know about this, and, you know, it may not have run in your local paper, but it did run in the McClatchy papers, and these are the exact kind of people that Obama would be charging with espionage for. In effect, it would be tantamount to helping Saddam Hussein. In other words, it could have saved America the trouble of a giant war that didn't do anything except help Iran and kill a million Iraqis for nothing.
I mean, the fact is that stuff is overclassified. Things are information that's not correct is classified to protect it, to conceal it from the American people. And in the case of the war in Iraq, or at least the lead up to the war, there were classified information that was selectively leaked to certain news organizations that was not just bogus, but involved defectors who weren't defectors, you know, information that was just totally wrong, and it was put in papers like the New York Times, which by senior administration officials that who could then go on the Sunday talk shows and talk about not about the secrets that they were keeping, but the information that was now appearing in the New York Times. They were free to talk about it in that context. And so, yeah, I mean, it's a system that's badly broken that needs to be fixed. And the fact is that what I think governments fail to understand is the harsher they are perceived to crack down on information that should be public, on civil liberties, on privacy, the greater the chances you're going to have an Edward Snowden or a Private Manning who are going to say, you know what, this isn't the way things need work, and they will end up revealing secrets to a journalist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I mean, it is really ham-handed, isn't it? The way they indicted him for espionage, if anything, they should have been saying, listen, pal, we'll charge you with the lightest felony that we can find. Just please come home. Instead, they chase him to Russia. Like, what are they doing?
Well, I have to tell you, just to go on the record here, you know, I think that there were certain things that perhaps he shouldn't have revealed. But the idea that, you know, that the government is collecting the millions of data from millions of Americans' daily telephone calls is just reprehensible, and I think that obviously that's what drove him to do what he did. And as I said, I think the more that kind of thing happens, and the harder the government tries to crack down on that kind of thing, the more Edward Snowdens we're going to have.
Right. And then instead of us learning just the worst parts, we could end up with us learning all kinds of things, sources and methods compromised
exactly
on the next
right.
one, right?
Exactly right. Exactly
you know,
right.
Worst problem.
Exactly right.
All right. And now I have to say this. I'm sorry to just kind of tack this on to the end of your interview. You can comment on it if you want. But it seems to me like It is a major part of the story here is that this is the choking life that Osama bin Laden was trying to trick us into creating for ourselves, and we've fallen for it. That is the whole point. The action is in the reaction. So you knock the towers down to try to provoke an overreactive invasion of the Middle East to bleed us to bankruptcy and all that, but also create a police state in America that the people resent enough that finally we will make our government just pull the bases out of Saudi Arabia then. We don't want to live in a police state. And it's just the long way out of Arabia to me. We could have knocked all this off a decade ago.
You know, I can't comment on, you know, that whatever his motives were in that regard. But certainly the government, the United States government, has a habit, predictably, of overreacting to these kinds of things, instead of taking a step back and a deep breath and saying, you know what, the Europeans have been dealing with terrorism and violent terrorism for a very long time, but they don't react by going and invading other countries. They use their police, they use their intelligence services, they do it in very intelligent ways, and they understand, after dealing with this for literally centuries, that you're not going to be able to wipe it out, and you need to be able to deal with it in a responsible and balanced way. Instead, here, you know, I've always said that I've always looked at Al-Qaeda and the international terrorism threat and said, you know what, we are treating these guys like, or I should say the United States government is treating these guys, and in that I include Congress very much, like the modern day equivalent of the Soviet nuclear arsenal. Like they are an existential threat to the United States. Look. They can create huge tragedies for the people who they kill and their families. But the fact is, I believe, short of them ever getting a nuclear weapon, the biggest threat they are to the political standing of whoever happens to be in the White House and Congress when they succeed in, for instance, using an underwear bomb to blow up an airliner over an American city. That would be a huge tragedy, but it's not going to end the United States as we know it. Unfortunately, this is the way these kinds of things are treated.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, and by blaming freedom and clamping down the way they do, they are ending the United States as we knew it, and now we live in the homeland, and it's a wholly different place. As you said, they're keeping track of our mom's phones and everything. I mean, I would have assumed they were tapping your phone, Jonathan, but you deserve it because you do such great work.
I sure hope they are, but I do assume now I've assumed for a long time that when dealing with sources that yes, my phone is
very
may not be clean.
All right. Hey, listen, thanks. I've already kept you extra. Thank you very much for your great work. I appreciate it.
Sure.
All right, everybody. That's Jonathan Landay. This piece is with Marissa Taylor. She's actually the head on the byline here. It's just I know his email address. That's all. Marissa Taylor and Jonathan S. Landay at McClatchy Newspapers. Obama's crackdown views leaks as aiding enemies of U.S. This is a really important one. I highly suggest that you read it from cover to cover here. It's a very important article.
Over at AIPAC, the leaders of the Israel lobby in Washington, D.C., they're constantly proclaiming unrivaled influence on Capitol Hill, and they should be proud. The NRA and AARP's efforts make them look like puppy dogs in comparison to the campaigns of intimidation regularly run by the neoconservatives and Israel firsters against their political enemies. But the Israel lobby does not remain unopposed. At the Council for the National Interest, they put America first, insisting on an end to the empire's unjustified support for Israel's aggression against its neighbors and those whose land it occupies, and pushing back against the lobby's determined campaign in favor of U.S. attacks against Israel's enemies. CNI also does groundbreaking work on the trouble with evangelical Christian Zionism and neocon-engineered Islamophobia and drumming up support for this costly and counterproductive policy. Please help support the efforts of the Council for the National Interest to create a peaceful, pro-American foreign policy. Just go to councilforthenationalinterest.org and click Donate under About Us at the top of the page. And thanks.
Oh, man, I'm late. Sure hope I can make my flight.
Stand there.
Me? I am standing here.
Come here.
Okay.
Hands up. Turn around.
Whoa, easy.
Into the scanner.
Ooh, what's this in your pants?
Hey, slow down. It's just my...
Hold it right there. Your wallet has tripped the metal detector. What's this? The Bill of Rights?
That's right.
It's just a harmless stainless steel business card-sized copy of the Bill of Rights from SecurityEdition.com. They're for exposing the TSA as a bunch of liberty-destroying goons who've never protected anyone from anything. Sir, now give me back my wallet and get out of my way. Got a plane to catch.
Have a nice day.
Play a leading role in the security theater with the Bill of Rights Security Edition from SecurityEdition.com. It's the size of a business card, so it fits right in your wallet, and it's guaranteed to trip the metal detectors wherever the police state goes. That's SecurityEdition.com. And don't forget their great Fourth Amendment socks.
Hey, guys, I got his laptop.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson is a successful former hedge fund manager whose site is unique on the web. Subscribers are allowed a window into Mike's very real main account and receive announcements and explanations for all his market moves. The Federal Reserve has been inflating the money supply to finance the bank bailouts and terror war overseas. So Mike's betting on commodities, mining stocks, European markets, and other hedges against our depreciating dollar. Play along on paper or with real money, and then be your own judge of Mike's investment strategies. See what happens at WallStreetWindow.com. Admit it, our public debate has been reduced to reading each other's bumper stickers. Scott Horton here for LibertyStickers.com. I made up most of them, and most of those when I was mad as hell about something. So if you hate war, empire, central banking, cops, Republicans, Democrats, gun grabbers, and status of all stripes, go to LibertyStickers.com, and there's a good chance you'll find just what you need for the back of your truck. Own a bookstore? Sell guns at the show? Get the wholesaler's deal. Buy any 100 stickers and they drop down in price to a dollar a piece. You can spread the contempt and make a little money too. That's LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Hey y'all, Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the journal of the Future Freedom Foundation. Every month, Plumline Individualist editor Sheldon Richmond brings you important news and opinions on policy by heroic FFF President Jacob Hornberger, hard-hitting journalist columnist James Bovard, and others from the best of the libertarian movement. The Future of Freedom tackles the most important issues facing our country, from the bankrupt and insane welfare and regulatory states, to foreign wars and empire, the dismal state of our economy, and ongoing assaults on civil liberties. This society needs peace and freedom for prosperity to prevail. Subscribe to the Future of Freedom in print for just $25 a year, or online for $15 a year, at fff.org/subscribe. And hurry up! Because this summer they'll be running my articles about the wars in Libya, Syria, and Somalia in the Future of Freedom too. That's fff.org/subscribe for the Future of Freedom. And tell them Scott sent you.